Hi, this is Byron Richards, and you are tuned into my weekly wellness update podcast, bringing you the health news, which you can, of course, put to use in your life to better and improve the quality of your health and well-being. Well, we'll, of course, get started with our news of the week. And first up is a story on whey protein. Whey protein lowers cholesterol and triglycerides in overweight adults. Always good to see human studies following along with the nutrition that's so well proven in animal and cell studies. Here we see a case with whey protein being given. It's a 12-week study with obese adults, average age 48. And what they found was that whey protein actually helped to lower their triglycerides, lower their cholesterol, and improve their blood sugar metabolism. They had less insulin resistance. 6 weeks into the program, those on whey protein already had an improvement in their triglycerides. Now, triglycerides, which I call fat blobs in your bloodstream, are very important because the more of them that you have piling up, they're kind of like trucks in your circulation, and they get in the way of leptin getting into your brain. They start to create leptin resistance. So just even on 6 weeks into using whey protein, we already saw a lowering of triglycerides, which by definition means we have a lowering of leptin resistance. And then as it was continued on, cholesterol and blood sugar improved. That's pretty good for whey protein. Of course, I like whey protein at breakfast. Fast, easy, mix it up, take it. You're on the go, ready to move. I don't spend a lot of time on breakfast. I mean, it's fine to take, you know, more time with breakfast if you have the time or want to spend the time. I personally like a bigger breakfast, say on a Sunday morning or something. But generally in the week, I'm pretty interested in just getting on to things, and I personally like whey protein. This is just another study showing that protein, especially, and of course I like protein at breakfast because it gets your metabolism going, is a great way to boost and fortify your health. Now, ginger reduces muscle pain following exercise. Of course, many people are looking for strategies to help them recover from exercise. This particular study with ginger is a human study. Of course, ginger is a pretty well-known anti-inflammatory nutrient. It's kind of a digestive-helping nutrient. I mean, it's got a bunch of things working for it. But in this particular study, it shows that ginger was able to reduce the muscle pain following exercise. Of course, if you have muscle pain or if you develop muscle pain, and this, of course, is extremely problematic for people with joint pains or fibromyalgia-like response to exercise, but it's a pain-numbing effect, and the researchers point out, it agrees with earlier studies showing the pain-killing effect of ginger for osteoarthritis, which is the wearing out of joints. So ginger, it's a nice nutrient, once again, to have on your anti-inflammatory team. And here we have Feverfew, pain reduction and cancer prevention. So Feverfew is another great anti-inflammatory herb. Of course, it's been used. There's some clinical studies that have been around for a number of years showing that Feverfew can reduce the pain of arthritis and migraine headaches. It's been a traditional remedy for migraines and preventing them. So we know that it's a good pain reduction compound in the first place. The active component is called partheniloid. We now see with this new science is really interesting because they're putting these nutrients through the paces and looking at gene technology and gene arrays that they use to study things. And they find here that Feverfew lowers the core inflammatory gene regulator known as NF-kappa-B. You know, it's amazing how many nutrients regulate NF-kappa-B. I mean, it is central to inflammation. It just goes to prove how important nutrition has been to human evolution and survival. Because you have to have tools to regulate or to help support the healthy function of NF-kappa-B, which means to keep the lid on its inflammatory response. Now, some of the new studies on this Feverfew are showing that besides regulating NF-kappa-B, it's influencing genes relating to cancer, which is helping to kill cancer cells and leaving healthy cells alone. So the Feverfew is just one more nutrient. It's kind of like green tea and quercetin. I mean, these things have an ability to tell the difference between healthy cells and cancer cells and actually help to work in the health direction, you know, helping to knock out the bad guys and helping to perpetuate the good guys. Very powerful, fundamentally powerful studies here with nutrition. All right, chondroitin sulfate lowers the core inflammatory signal. Well, here we see again, you know, of course, chondroitin sulfate and glucosamine, they're very popular joint support nutrients. They've been around for, well over a decade in terms of their ability to help the body synthesize new tissues. And now we see that that chondroitin sulfate, in addition to acting as a structural raw material for cartilage, and circulatory tissue and so on, it actually is a regulator, and it's regulating the inflammatory gene signal NF-kappa-B. Well, this is starting to send the what I call the structural nutrients into regulatory function. So a lot of time in the past here, you know, with nutrients like chondroitin and glucosamine and MSM sulfur, we just thought of them as like 2x4s and plywood, and there were other nutrients that seemed to regulate the inflammation itself. These nutrients seem to mostly be involved with building things up so that you had raw materials to build things. Well, this is changing. In fact, I'm going to do some additional reporting on glucosamine and MSM sulfur. That'll probably be on next week's podcast. But my point is, these nutrients are starting to show up as gene regulatory nutrients, and not just for joints, but chondroitin sulfate may help inflammation in general. And this has led the researchers to say, oh, hey, you know, this might be good for inflammatory bowel disease, you know, atherosclerosis, Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, MS, ALS, rheumatoid arthritis, and even systemic lupus. And so we're seeing here now that the chondroitin sulfate may have a role with nutritional health far beyond just joint health. And that's kind of interesting. It's via this mechanism of inflammation modulation. Okay, we have early life calcium affecting later life osteoporosis and obesity risk. Now, this study was done in pigs. And pigs, of course, have similar bone metabolism to humans. I can't say it's identical, but it's similar enough that they like to study them for this purpose, and also because pigs actually get broken bones from falling, and I guess pigs and humans are about the only two that do. At any rate, what they did here was they took newborn pigs and they depleted them of calcium. They gave them a calcium inadequate diet for the first 18 days of life, and then looked at their bones, and they found that their bones had developed significant impairment in terms of their bone metabolism and even bone loss for that time of life. And what they found is that the bone cells, the bone cells themselves that should have become healthier bone actually became fat cells. Now, that's not surprising. I mean, that shouldn't surprise you if, you know, the stem cells within bone have the ability to become many different things, not just bone cells. And so depending on what genes are switched on or off, that's the issue. Now, here we see calcium not just acting like a raw material for bones, like, you know, similar to the analogy of the chondroitin sulfates I was just talking about, but calcium is now acting as a gene regulator. And it's helping to program the genes that determine what the bone stem cells are going to become. And a lack of calcium causes them to become fat cells. And this actually sets up a pattern that then can be dominant for one's lifetime. So it's very important for mothers. Now, mothers, of course, are usually depleted in calcium just from the process of going through pregnancy, which is a high demand on bones and calcium. So very important for nursing mothers to have adequate calcium intake, especially in the first few weeks of life when they're nursing their child, because this could have a profound effect on programming the bones to become bone cells through calcium programming. So the stem cells and bones more likely to become bone cells instead of fat cells, which is not exactly what you want. Fat cells, too many of them anyway. All right, breast milk is far superior to formula. Well, I think most people know this, at least intuitively, but this is the first time, first of a kind study, whereby they analyzed the stools of infants. So this is a human study looking at the stool samples of infants, both breastfed and bottle fed. And this is the first time they've been able to run these, again, the very broad, comprehensive gene analysis on the digestive stool makeup and say, okay, they can actually see what genes have been turned on or not, and if it's similar, and of course it wasn't even remotely similar. All these bioactive compounds in mother's milk or breast milk have this huge ability to impact the development of the digestive tract as well as immunity within the digestive tract. And of course, these things are the biggest chores that a little person has to do. You know, when you're born, you haven't really used your digestive tract yet, so you actually have to learn how to use it, and the lessons you learn can affect your health for an entire lifetime. So breast milk, or of course, has things in it like lactoferrin that puts iron in a cage so that it can be properly get into the little one's body without inducing a lot of free radical damage. A lot of formulas have free iron, which is the opposite of lactoferrin. I mean, and of course, that free iron causes oxidative damage and free radical distress. In fact, one of the main findings of the study was that the regulation of oxygen was far superior in a breastfed baby. So mother's milk, breast milk, human milk, whatever you want to call it, I mean, this stuff is a nutritional powerhouse that goes way beyond just, you know, the kind of fat or protein or carbohydrate or calorie. It actually has a lot of regulating nutrients. And I would certainly suggest that if for some reason a mother cannot nurse, you know, whatever that reason may be, I mean, there are sometimes this happens, not just by choice, but by problem, that they actually use some bovine colostrum, which is the next best thing, so that they get some of these bioactive compounds, since bovine colostrum has been shown in humans to help both digestive tract and immune system function. So that would be a replacement to some extent, but I don't think there's really any way to make up for good old-fashioned healthy human milk fed to children. I think it's of extreme importance for mothers to do this. Vitamin E protects lungs from damage. Well, now this is kind of an interesting study because we're looking at what is called chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, or COPD, which that is a big healthcare cost in this society of ours, over $40 billion a year and going up. A lot of emergency room visits, a lot of drugs to treat the symptoms of not being able to breathe. COPD is marked by progressive lung deterioration, lung inflammation, and you know, and eventual lung damage. And it's kind of a, it's really a diagnosis that means nothing other than that the lungs don't work right. And it's a label that the medical profession gives to dispense drugs to treat symptoms. And never do they really repair the lungs. They just sort of treat the symptoms of not being able to breathe, you know, bronchodilators, things like that, which don't actually fix anything. My point here is that vitamin E was able to protect the lungs from such damage. And in fact, the higher the dose of vitamin E, the better. And, you know, it reduced the risk in human population by 10%, which is a lot when you're talking about that many people having this kind of problem of weakened lungs. The point being, vitamin E, especially what I call the tocotrienol form of vitamin E, which is so, you know, has the highly superior alpha-tocotrienol antioxidant and the cholesterol-regulating and mutation-inhibiting gamma-tocotrienol. These things just aren't present in regular vitamin E, but just regular, you know, vitamin E activity is protecting the lungs significantly, to the point where it could have a huge impact on disease in older individuals. Now, of course, the American Heart Association has done the older population a favor by scaring them on the subject of vitamin E. Complete fallacy, by the way. There's absolutely no problem with natural vitamin E, and especially the high-quality forms such as the tocotrienols. I mean, this is it's all about money. It's all about the American Heart Association wanting their patients to line up like sheeple and take statins and other drugs. And they don't like vitamin E because, whoa, it actually makes them better, including heart health. Very important to understand. Vitamin E is very, 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 very good for your heart. Not the least bit problematic. And so it's also very good for your lungs, as this new study shows. So Vitamin E absolutely should be part of anybody's program these days, since our lungs are being exposed. It's not just smokers who get COPD anymore. It's lots of people, because the environment is so polluted in any major metropolitan area. You know, the EPA can have all kinds of standards about what should and shouldn't be in the air, but the fact is, you know, most cities flunk. And there's not much they can do about it, so what good does it do to have the rules about the quality of the air, because there's no way to conform to them anyway. So in most cases, on most days, many major metropolitan areas have way more or way higher levels of pollutants that are potentially irritating to the lungs than they should. That's just the fact of life. It's experimental survival of the fittest. Vitamin E, protect your lungs. Good news. All right, curcumin. Linking leptin, obesity, joint problems, and inflammation. Well, you know, it's kind of interesting that, I mean, you can get the idea that if a person is heavier, they're going to have extra weight and extra mechanical stress, therefore, on their joints. So you think, well, okay, you know, the extra body weight is just hard on joints, and that's what's wearing the joints out. And true enough, that's an aspect of the problem. But really, what's happening here is the leptin resistance associated with being overweight is turning on genes in the synovial fluid, or the liquid membrane that lubricates the joints. I mean, you know, I mean, think about it. If you have adequate synovial fluid working properly, there's 100 times less friction than ice on ice skates. I mean, that's how slippery hyaluronic acid should be in your joints. So if your joints are creaking, they're not doing so well, they're inflamed, especially your knee joints, for example, you're not close to 100 times less friction than ice on ice skates. You got a problem. You shouldn't let that problem progress, because you can actually wear the tissue away. And then, of course, once the cartilage is gone, you're in a lot more trouble. But the point being here is that it's not just the mechanical pressure of the extra weight on your joints when you're overweight that causes joint wear. It's actually the leptin signaling gone awry that turns on inflammation that causes joint deterioration. This is why individuals who are overweight can have a severe loss of cartilage that's pretty alarming, actually, from this problem. And it can, of course, lead directly to rheumatoid arthritis as well. So it's not just osteoarthritis, but it can actually be an autoimmune attack of the joints that goes on here. Well, the point is, and I point this out in this new posting, there's curcumin is one nutrient that not only changes the inflammation in the synovial fluid cells and prevents the destruction of cartilage, it's actually changing the leptin signaling that's driving the problem in the first place. Now, that's pretty darn amazing, and that means that you can get, as part of your anti-inflammatory team, curcumin is wonderful. I mean, of course, you can combine curcumin with quercetin or bromelain or ginger or feverfew. You have all kinds of tools that you can have on your anti-inflammatory team. They all work a little bit differently, but they all kind of go back to regulating this NF-kappa-B or related inflammation and lowering it. So just like you need enough emotional time or strategies to recover from stress, between your diet and your dietary supplements, you need adequate anti-inflammatory components. This is why diets high in fruit and vegetables, that's where you're going to get most of your anti-inflammatories. Not all of them, but most of them. You want these things to be higher because you need them in your anti-inflammatory bank account. There's no such thing, by the way, of suppressing inflammation out of existence by taking too many anti-inflammatories. No, no, no. The process of just going through the day, the process of wear and tear, these are processes based on physical demands. It's not that you can have too little inflammation and then be unhealthy from the other side of the coin. I sometimes get asked that question. It's not the situation at all. You need nutrition to buffer the demands in your life, and inflammation is one of them. So when you have adequate anti-inflammatory reserves, your nutrients don't keep on uninflaming you, so you can't be inflamed when you need to be, because inflammation is actually an important part of many processes in our bodies. No, indeed, it's keeping the system from overheating. That's the role of nutrition, keeping it from getting too hot and then starting to run too hot on a regular basis. This is it's the core to accelerated aging, cancer risk, many other things here, not just joint wear and tear. So we're seeing a lot of overlap now between physical deterioration based on inflammation and health deterioration based on inflammation. And we're finding that many of the nutrients, such as curcumin, address all of these issues simultaneously. So that's kind of interesting, and it's very good news for the health-conscious consumer of a good diet and dietary supplements. That's what you can do with this stuff. This is cutting edge, and it's, you know, it can make all the difference in the world between wear and tear and not having wear and tear. All right, next we're going to go to your questions for the week. Let's see, we're going to start out with Ryan, who says, I am curious about what occurs after a significant weight loss regarding the release of hormones or toxins that may cause acne. I lost 35 pounds about a year and a half ago, and about 2 weeks after the weight loss, I got oily skin and acne all over my back and shoulders. I have gotten a little bit better, but it is still there. I have tried oregano oil, zinc, fish oil, and then vitamin D, along with a diet consisting of predominantly fruits and vegetables, but nothing works. What can you recommend that might help? I'm starting to think this will never go away. Well, the interesting point about what you're saying here, Ryan, is that the problem is on your back and shoulders. And, of course, that means you have lymphatic overload, absolutely for sure. Now, oregano oil could help if the dose is high enough. You might need 9 or 12 a day. I would also recommend Immune Plus to help clear your lymph system because that's where the problem is. Now, sometimes your lymph is backing up, partly because your liver can't deal with certain toxins. And in that case, I would go to high chlorella intake because a lot of the fat-soluble toxins you could have released during weight loss could have still been circulating, and they will wreak havoc with your lymph system. So maybe that did happen to you, and I would do chlorella anywhere from 6 a day, even up to 12 a day or more. Sometimes you get that dose high enough, and it just literally absorbs those toxins that are in coming out of fat or have come out of fat and gets them out of your circulation. But somehow or another, your lymph got backlogged. That's a for sure. Now you got to get it running again, plus you want to clear out any infection that is due to the backlog because the lymph system is, of course, your main immunologic system. And once you clog it with debris, clutter, toxins, whatever, then you're more at risk for problems with it. And that could even be like low-grade infections flaring up. But a lot of times with weight loss, you're just getting, especially if you've had rapid weight loss, and you did 35 pounds, you'll have a big surge of PCBs and other toxins. That's been proven. So you got to have ways to get these out. Of course, simple basics, besides what I've said here, would be just additional fiber. So digestive support, liver support, lymph support, you find the right combination that works for you, Ryan, and the problem will be solved. Francine says, I am suffering from multiple infections, candida, viral activity, and adverse bacterial populations, and some autoimmune activity in the gut, and usually feel queasy, especially in the morning with stiffness and mucus. I've been trying to take the arabinogalactin, amongst other things, that's Immune Plus, of course, but it makes my throat flare up and puts pressure on my head and ears so they feel like they are popping. I read something about the T helper cells and immune system imbalance, which you could be stimulating in the wrong direction. Could I be making the situation worse? Is this maybe a good sign of activity? Well, here's the thing. When you take something like Immune Plus, which is designed to help clear your lymph system, that's the arabinogalactin, and you actually feel symptoms, your throat flaring up, which would indicate more congestion in that area, and more pressure on your head, meaning, and your ears are popping, that's what Immune Plus is supposed to clear up. So if that's what you're getting when you're taking it, you're actually moving more trash towards your lymph faster, and it's actually still clogged. So you need some other strategies. I would suggest quercetin, possibly Repair Plus, which has a little bit of quercetin in it, but has the bromelain and the curcumin in it. That's a very good lymph cleaner. Oregano oil, which also helps to besides its germicidal activity against everything, it's also a solvent to lymph sludge. So you may need something else besides arabinogalactin to get your lymph moving. Then, of course, your liver's got to be working, because anytime you have a history with viral infections, you've got to have more liver support, because usually these low-grade chronic viral infections are either hanging out in your voice box or your liver. And if your system, if your toxins or if your elimination system is getting getting congested as you're trying to improve, and then you're getting that voice flare-up. That's usually a little low-grade viral that's flaring up. So you have to find a strategy to move the lymph, the liver, and your digestion all at the same time at a rate your body can handle. And then you have to gradually increase anti-infectives like monolaurin or candida helper or oregano oil. And you can't go too fast, because if you go too fast, you'll get what's called a die-off of the offending organisms, and then they will, their pollution will even clog your lymph system further because they're just toxic. So you got to get your foot in the door here. And you get your foot in the door, then you can start unraveling this. But it is, that's it. You just got to try different lymph-moving strategies, find a combination that actually gets you to feel better instead of like pressures building up. And so on. Now, I must admit, just here another caveat here, Francine, is that sometimes, this is kind of a tough way of doing it, so I'm not necessarily saying you should, but sometimes you could double up on your rebenogalactin, you might even feel a little bit more pressure coming on, and then poof, it all blows through. I've seen people do this, but, it's usually men. Men who want to tough it out and go faster and think that they can, and sometimes they do. I've seen this a number of times over the years where they start building up the pressure, they start doubling, tripling their doses, and it's like, whoa, this is really intense, and then poof, it all goes through. So that's another strategy that I don't ever mind people trying these things. It's good to figure out how your body's working, but sometimes it works that way too. All right, Julie says, I am a normal weight, but I have cellulite. I thought this mostly happened to people who are overweight. Why do you get it when you are normal weight? I'm 32 and frustrated. Well, Julie, estrogen is the main issue. I mean, women have much more cellulite than men. It's not that men can't have cellulite. Normally, it's reflective of low testosterone in men when they do get cellulite. But women get it because the estrogen is actually stimulating the formation of connective tissue faster, and then there is a backup problem. There's either toxins or stress chemicals or something inflammatory going on in the area under the skin there, and so that's a circulation fat problem going on. But then the extra estrogen stimulation is trying to rejuvenate the inflamed tissue, but there's too much crud in the way, so then the new tissue is formed irregularly, and that's what gives you cellulite. That's how you actually get it. So you can, if you have heavy menstrual cycles, breast swelling, headaches, signs of extra estrogen with your menstrual cycle, you'd want to take something like Female Plus, which is really good at helping to smooth out estrogen fluctuations, or maybe even some Profem cream with the progesterone to help balance the problem. That helps to relieve the excessive estrogenic stimulation in the area. Then you want to clear the sludge from it. So the products like Repair Plus or Cardio Helper or even Daily Balancer, these things help to clean and remove toxins and restore the integrity of the tissue, and the Repair Plus can even help to take down some of the irregular stuff. And when you do that, then you start to get a better tightening effect, and it's a lot better. So it's a combination of estrogen surplus with either stress or toxins. A lot of times people have digestive problems, and then once they have the digestive problems, that back pressures their lymph in their legs, and that really flares it up. So a lot of the cellulite problems are actually coming from gas, bloating, indigestion, and poor lymph function in the digestive tract area. So you got to kind of play a little bit of detective to understand what your issues might be. Could just be stress. Just the combination of estrogen and stress. And, that's it. But you shouldn't be having these problems. You shouldn't have to deal with it. You're young. You should be able to get over this, Julie. Even older people can make significant improvement on these issues. Okay, Jim says, on some nights when I lay down at night to go to sleep, my pulse feels like it is pounding in my head. I've noticed this is worse as if I've eaten late or had a big dinner. Sometimes my left arm falls asleep while I'm sleeping. Sometimes I have restless legs. My doctor says that since none of these happens all the time, that I shouldn't be concerned, as lots of people have these problems. Well, that's true. Do you know what causes these different problems? Are they related? Well, actually, most of them are related, and it's kind of interesting you would send in this question, Jim, when we've been talking here about the lymph system. But when you lay down to go to sleep at night, you're changing your physical position of your body, and your lymph system is the dominant system that's going to clean house while you're sleeping. So the lymph system is a pressure system. So when you start to feel pressure building up in your head, that automatically means your lymph system is congested. So you have a baseline level of lymph congestion that you feel as soon as you stop mechanically moving around and lay down. That's what that pulsing in your head is all about. And of course it would be worse if you've eaten late or had a big dinner, because all that extra food is in your lymph system, congesting it. Your lymph system, besides being your nighttime system for house cleaning, also is absorbing and transporting the fats in your food. And if you've eaten a lot later at night, then that's going to get in the way of your house cleaning activities, because your body is kind of interesting. You know, your kitchen and your restrooms are sort of, they sort of use the same systems, whether it's your digestive tract or your lymph system. I mean, you know, the body's got a system of economy here. And so you have to take turns. So that's why you don't want to eat so late or so close to bed. It's never a good thing. Your arm falling asleep when you're sleeping, that is because the thoracic duct on the side of your left side, which is coming from your digestive tract, mind you, that's the left side one. So that would be, of course, more associated with eating late. But that could be associated with imbalanced gut flora as well. But that is what causes, that swells and pushes on the nerves that go to your arm. And that's what causes that arm to go to sleep. And, of course, restless legs. That's not so much the lymph problem. That's a nerve stress wear and tear issue, where your nerves build up friction during the day and then try to discharge it out your long nerves at night. It's a form of trying your body, making an attempt to detox your nerves, because there's just too much wear and tear in there. So far you've told me, Jim, that you have too much wear and tear and that you have a sluggish plumbing system. And all of these things in that regard are related, and that's why you have those problems. The fact that you don't have them all the time means you ebb and flow here with the degree. It's worse when you eat at late. It compounds issues, but even your baseline isn't so good. So you want to work on B vitamins to help your nerves, maybe some stress helpers, something, whatever it helps. You'll find if you get your energy better during the day, you won't have the restless legs so much. If you're really bothered by them, I would take during the day some quercetin and acetyl L-carnitine, maybe even some calcium AAP, which pushes the inflammatory signals out of your nerves so they're not there at night when you go to sleep. And of course, you need better detox so that your lymph system isn't so backlogged by the time you get to the end of the day. So that's things like daily balancer during the day, maybe some extra fiber, and of course Immune Plus, even Repair Plus. Very good for this kind of stuff, Jim. Peter says, whenever I try to run, my calf muscles hurt and just keep getting worse. If I push through it, they can hurt for up to a week. I'd like to exercise more intensely, but this just doesn't seem right. Any ideas as to how I can fix this problem? Peter, not only does that not seem right, it's actually not right. And when you hurt for up to a week and you're hurting using the muscles, your oxygenation capacity in your calf muscles is not adequate for the exercise you're doing, and you're actually killing tissue in your calf muscles trying to push through it. So those old locker room signs, you know, no pain, no gain, they have nothing to do with your situation, Peter. You are inducing tissue damage from the exercise. Now, there's various reasons for that, but they fall into the category of a lack of oxygenation. So my first two remedies would be the daily Super E and Cardio Helper, maybe even some Q10 before you exercise, and see if that helps. If that isn't enough help, then I would add a blood builder, which has got the iron bisglycinate in it. Iron in your muscles is utilized by a protein called myoglobulin, which holds oxygen in your muscles and enables your muscles to perform. So you need to deliver oxygen to it better, which is what things like what Cardio Helper, vitamin E, daily Super E, and CoQ10 can do. And then you need to be able to use oxygen better. And, of course, maybe some extra magnesium, like the Muscle Mag, would help with the cramping. But normally cramping that and calf muscles that hurt and then they keep getting worse, that's almost always just significant oxygen deprivation. The only other time I've ever seen that is in people who are, you know, type 2 diabetic or almost diabetic. And, again, they have the same problem. They just have too much sugar in their blood. But that issue is also shorting the oxygen to their muscles. Now, it is possible, of course, to lose circulation in your legs, but the very same remedies would tend to help. And what you want to do is get this working in the right direction, Peter, and then gradually increase what you're doing. You do not want to push yourself to keep having these muscles hurting, because it's reflective of damage, especially when you have that long recovery period. You know, it's kind of like spraining an ankle instead of actually getting better, and you don't want to have exercise work against you. So that's how you get around this. It's solvable, believe me. I've seen it many times. And you want to get over it so you can get that better response to exercise that you are actually desiring to do. Okay, well, that's it for your questions this week. If you have a question you would like to ask me, please send it to askbyron@wellnessresources.com, and I'll be happy to take it up. And I'll, of course, be back next week with another podcast with the breaking health news and the questions. I always like trick questions or difficult questions. Trick isn't really the right word, but certainly, if you have a problem that's been nagging you for a while or it's a little complex, try to keep your question not too long, but try to get it in here, and we'll see if I have an answer for you. All right, take care now. Have a great week.
The Weekly Wellness Update podcast is produced by Wellness Resources Incorporated. All rights reserved. For more information on the topics and news covered in today's podcast, visit wellnessresources.com. To email Byron a specific health question, send it to askbyron@wellnessresources.com. The information presented in this podcast is for informational purposes. It is not medical advice for the treatment of any condition or illness. You should not use the information in this podcast for diagnosis or treatment of any health problem or to discontinue the use of any medication that has been prescribed to you. Consult your physician or healthcare professional for such needs. Statements made during this podcast regarding any Wellness Resources dietary supplement products have not been evaluated by the FDA. Wellness Resources dietary supplement products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.